Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We welcome in on WEEI Field Yates of ESPN joining us here on Jones and Keefe. Field, thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it.
No problem, guys. Hope you guys are doing well.
We are. We're looking over some of the work you put out recently, your draft coverage throughout the months and days leading up to the draft. A couple of days ago, you and Mel Kiper traded off picks. 1, 2, 3, 4, you'd take turns. Kiper had the Patriots pick at 4, but let's give you the same scenario. He went with Will Campbell at 4. Ward's gone, Hunter's gone, Carter's gone, Patriots are on the clock. He went Will Campbell. Who would you go with?
Yeah, I'm going Will Campbell as well, and I understand that probably your guys' show has focused as much on Will Campbell as maybe any prospect not named Travis Hunter or Abdul Carter during this pre-draft process. You know, and I understand why he can be a lightning rod for some because of the fact that drafting a tackle who has 32 5/8 inch or 33-inch arms would make him an outlier relative to NFL left tackle standards. You know, guys, I think I've just consistently seen Will a little bit differently throughout the process. You know, Mel and I have at times gone back and forth on whether he would do the same thing that I would. But I think the way that I look at the arm length dilemma for a player is I start by, how does the tape look? How does it look against the top competition that you can see at the college football level? And while it's not the NFL, obviously, the SEC is as close as you'll get to an NFL representation at the college football level. And no prospect is perfect. But on the rare, and I do mean rare occasion, that Will Campbell looked vulnerable at the collegiate level, I didn't think very often the root of that issue was his arm length. I don't see guys consistently getting into the chest of Will Campbell, which is one of the primary concerns you have about an offensive tackle who lacks premier length. Or defensive end is just saying, hey, we're going to get our hands on you first, and no matter how good your footwork is or no matter how strong your base is, we're just going to find a way to work our way through or around you. I didn't see that with Will. He's one of the cleanest prospects in the entire class, truly. On top of the fact that he plays a premium position that the Patriots really need, super battle-tested, and he's an off-the-charts kid. I think if we sort of followed what Mike Vrabel has been preaching throughout the few times he has spoken since becoming the Patriots head coach, maybe a handful of times now, every trait that he has mentioned, I would say, aligns with what Will Campbell brings to the table. So, maybe others wouldn't be enthused by it, but if I'm the Patriots and Will Campbell's the pick at number 4, I'm actually feeling pretty darn good, especially in the context of this draft class, which is very different than last year, where blue chippers were all over the place in the first 12 to 15 picks, and then the depth really fell off. This year, there's just not nearly as many superstar blue chip caliber players, but there's a lot of guys in rounds 3 to 5 that will probably make your roster and compete early on in their careers.
Is the gap between Will Campbell and the next offensive lineman as big as, say, Ashton Jeanty and the next running back, or Ty Warren and the next tight end, and some of those other top end players?
I think the biggest gap from player 1 to player 2 at the positions that you just asked is for me, it's clearly running back. I think Ashton Jeanty, and we can debate whether running backs are even worth taking that early in the draft. But if you're just asking me in the context of, like, how many spots on the big board do I have to move down before I get to RB2 relative to offensive tackle 2 or tight end 2? It's clearly running back. I've got Amarian Hampton out of North Carolina as 26th overall on my board. So I think he's going to go somewhere in the first round. To me, any sooner than pick 20 or so would be a little bit of a rich spot for him to land. But I think given the fact that teams from 20 to 32 probably feel like they can be the equivalent of what Philadelphia and Baltimore and Green Bay were last year, where they were very good teams where a running back puts them over the top, as opposed to a struggling team where a very good running back just helps them be more entertaining on Sundays. So I think 20 to 32 is a range for Amarian Hampton, but I feel like Genty is in a whole different stratosphere of player. This guy he's unbelievable. I mean, I think he has the clearest path to becoming a Pro Bowler as a rookie, and that's independent of where he lands as an NFL player. Like, he could go to the Raiders at 6, he could go to the Bears at 10, he can go to the Saints at 9, and I'd like his odds because he's that special of a player, and you know, you would imagine that whoever drafts him very high is going to be motivated to lean on Ashton Genty a lot, since we know that A, running backs assimilate to the NFL a whole lot easier, and B, they don't often last that long relative to other positions, so you might as well get maximum value early.
So you mentioned your big board and the gap at running back. Mason Graham to Membu is 3 to 8. At tight end, you have Warren at 7 and Loveland at 11. So those are much tighter. You can see Field Yates' full big board. He tweeted it out today, at Field Yates on Twitter. You have Abdul Carter, 2. It's interesting. Here in New England, we spent a lot of time talking about could he fall to 4. It feels like Travis Hunter is more of a pipe dream there. There are some whispers. I think Bob McGinn at least started this. I'm curious to hear what you've heard on Abdul Carter and questions about his football character. Is that a concern for you on any level? Work ethic, the way he practices, his love for the game, et cetera, that sort of thing. Is that a concern with Abdul Carter?
It's not for me to the point that I would bypass him at number 4 if he gets there for New England. I'd say that much. I haven't ruled out Abdul Carter at number 2 to Cleveland. I think there's a lot of momentum for Travis Hunter, but I don't think that it's a complete done deal. I sort of feel like the only thing that's a done deal right now in the draft is Cam Ward going number 1 overall to Tennessee. But no, I don't do that. It's not how I have – that's not the information I've received on Abdul Carter. And, I mean, it didn't seem to prevent him from being an incredible player these past couple of seasons, 3 seasons at Penn State, 2 of which he was playing in a variety of different spots. Last year he played primarily as an edge rusher, had those 12 sacks. And, I mean, listen, I guess this is the time of the year that we hear this kind of stuff more often, but a guy who – probably could have sat out last season, or maybe like sat out half the season after he had showed what he was as an edge rusher, also played through a pretty serious shoulder injury late in the year when he didn't necessarily have to, right? And we see guys tap out of bowl games and tap out of late portions of the season all the time. And Abdul Carter kept going for Penn State. I think that speaks to the person that he is and speaks to the person that or the kind of player that he is, and he's an unbelievable player too. Like, the Patriots have obviously invested a lot on defense already this offseason, and there's a glaring left tackle need that must be addressed at some point, wide receiver as well. But if Travis Hunter goes 2 to the Browns and Shador Sanders goes 3 to the Giants, if I'm the Patriots, I'm doing the metaphorical sprint the cart into the commissioner and take Abdul Carter right away.
Well, Phil, you mentioned Shador Sanders, and it feels like from mock draft to mock draft, looking at everybody, there's no real true consensus on where Sanders could go. As a Patriots fan, all we're hoping is he goes 2 or 3. Right now, with a week to go before the draft, what kind of likelihood would you give that Sanders is a top 3 pick?
I think it's possible. I really do. And I think that there have been some people that have been saying, hey, this late quarterback workout for Shador Sanders and then Tyler Shuck and Jalen Milroe is part and parcel for the quarterback evaluation. And that, I think, has been true in some occasions in the past. I just think it also speaks to the idea that this team is still trying to figure this out, right? And I frankly, maybe I should, but I can't recall. Maybe you guys do offhand. Like, last year around this time, did you guys recall, hey, the Patriots are down in North Carolina working out Drake May or LSU working out Jaden Daniels to see whichever of those two falls, whether they be like truly enamored by the player? It sounds like the Giants are still sort of doing some information gathering. And I get it. This might just be posturing and they might be trying to create the perception to generate some sort of leverage. I'm just not so sure what kind of leverage they have, because I'm not sure that any team is going to move up to try to get Shedeur Sanders either ahead of number three or at number three to trade away from the Giants. So I think it's possible. You know, I fear that that assigning like probabilities to draft happenings probably ends up providing a lot less value than it does like substance. But I don't know if it's 50-50. I probably lean more towards them not taking Shedeur Sanders at number three. But a week ago, I would have told you, hey, it's just going to be Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter, whichever falls there. I feel that it's more likely they take Shedeur Sanders at third overall compared to where I was at this time last week.
Field Yates, ESPN. You can check out his big board, top 200 prospects at ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at Field Yates. You highlighted earlier this week teams that could move up or down in the draft. You put the Patriots in their own category as a team that could trade up or down. I'm assuming you mean down from four, up from 38. The whole climate in this draft you hear is that no one's really looking to move up at least early. Is that the kind of thing the Patriots could capitalize on at 38? Maybe they get stuck at four because no one's looking to move up. But if no one's looking to move up later on, could they really capitalize and get a good deal to move up from 38 to, I don't know, the mid to early 20s?
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at, is a couple of teams to earmark, you know, the Vikings and the Commanders, who are at 24 and 29 respectively, and they have a combined nine picks in this draft. So they're very bereft of draft capital right now because of various trades that they have made. And I mentioned earlier how, you know, the meat of this draft is, I would say, you know, call it like players 65 or 70 to like 125 or 150. My top 200 that I dropped this morning on ESPN.com, I'm telling you guys, like every time I've opened the document back up and I've just sort of scanned through, I'll be there at 140 and I'll say, like, how is that guy 140 when I'm not even sure he's better than 110? And then I go back and I look at 110 and I think that guy's better than 85. It's kind of a pretzel in the middle of the draft because it is so much of beauty in the eye of the beholder. But for the Patriots, when you do have such obvious needs right now, and you have this aggressive mentality that has sort of prevailed all off season, maybe you do take advantage of it where, you know, at the back end of the first round, if one of these offensive tackles is still there, you know, the Commanders are not a team that needs a left tackle. The Vikings aren't a team that needs a left tackle. They might be motivated to move down to pick up some extra draft capital and turn their nine combined picks into 10, 11, or 12, right? So if I'm the Patriots, you know, seeing how this team has attacked the offseason, the aggressive spending in free agency, the eventual acquisition of Stephon Diggs, which also in free agency, but it was, you know, an offer that, you know, to my knowledge, it was at least it has been publicly, no other offer has been publicly reported that Stephon Diggs received this offseason. So it feels like the Patriots' mindset is, hey, whatever it takes to get something done, get it done. And, I, you know, the Patriots have a lot of work to do, and the Bills are so clearly the best team in the division by, I think, a notable gap. But right now, if I'm the Patriots, I'm looking at this division and saying, I can leapfrog to the second-best team in the division if some of our stuff goes right. Drake May makes the step I think many people anticipate him to make. And then Mike Vrabel has the impact that I think he's expected to make based off of his head coaching history. So the idea of moving up from 38 to late in round one to me is something that from the Patriots is very intriguing if the board falls in a specific way.
All right, for the Patriots in round one, what would be your best-case scenario and what would be your worst-case scenario?
Best case scenario would probably be one of Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter falling to four. And yeah, I think, you know, they're really picking three, right? So it's really because the Titans, Cam Ward, that's done. And the Patriots obviously would not be in a quarterback market. I guess the only other I've in my own brain kind of landed on the Patriots taking one of Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter, and Will Campbell. That's where I have landed. It's not that I have their draft board. I'm just using my own sort of instincts and the positional need and where I have these players rated. So the number of outcomes I've considered is pretty low. It's two kind of, so I guess by default that makes worst case scenario not one of those guys being available. But you know, Will Campbell's the fifth player on my board. Like I don't feel like this is some, you know, catastrophic that would be some sort of catastrophic event or reality for the Patriots if that's how things fall. Like it's a huge need for the Patriots, and I think it's a darn good player. So you know, the worst case scenario, I think, is probably, you know, winning that game in week 18 where you're in this setup just in the first place. Right. But, you know, that's long behind us. And I don't think that within the construct of where they are and what I think is likely to happen, there's some terrible outcome here.
All right. OK. Very Field good. Yates. Excellent stuff. You can check out his latest ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at Field Yates. And if you're on the South Shore in the vicinity of Vitamin C Brewing in Weymouth, the draft party tonight, it's a Pats pre-draft chat and beer. Fitzy's going to be there along with Doug Kide and Andrew Callahan of the Boston Herald. All proceeds for the event go to Doug Kide's Leukemia and Lymphoma Society fundraiser in memory of his daughter, Haley. And one of the things you can bid on is 30 minutes of fantasy football advice from Field Yates, which I think is pretty ideal and a pretty good package. So it's a great cause if you're on the South Shore tonight. Field, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon.